Hi, this is Chris Evans with another Storage Unpack podcast. I'm joined by Martin this evening. It's just Martin and I. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Enjoying this lovely British weather. Nice and drizzly today. What better thing to do than a podcast, eh?
Yeah, well, we've hit autumn or the fall, as our American cousins like to call it.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell us it's going to be the smells of bonfire night and fireworks soon, without a doubt.
So we're going to talk about something a little bit less exciting today, aren't we?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's one of those technologies that's it's been around for eons, and in fact, it's probably the first permanent recording media that we really had of any sort of decent capacity, and that's tape. It's probably one of those things that people think, oh, tape, oh, okay. But, you know, surprisingly, it still gets bought. People still buy it. It's still being sold in large quantities. And I think perhaps the conversation today really is about the changing use of tape and why tape's moved to being probably more of an archive-type technology rather than what people would have looked at as traditionally backup.
Yeah, very much so. So what's driven this conversation is the announcement of LTO-8 or the release of LTO-8 now.
Yeah, so the eighth generation of the LTO technology, LTO being linear tape open. So that was IBM, Quantum and HP as a consortium who set that up in 2000 and have been churning out regular updates to that roadmap ever since. It's pretty impressive actually, Martin, when you look at it. Don't know whether you looked at the numbers at all.
I haven't. I know you've just looked them up.
Yeah, I put it together a little spreadsheet, and I like spreadsheets. It's always good to have a little spreadsheet. And if you look at the numbers, you know, you're talking about 100 gig in the first cartridge, 200 gig in the second, and a continual doubling of capacity around about a 2-to-1 ratio for compression, which changed to 2.5 in LTO-6. But what that means is we went from 100 gig in LTO-1 to LTO-8 being 12 terabytes worth of capacity.
Yeah, and we've got a big leap between LTO-7 and LTO-8 this time. LTO-7 was 6 terabytes. We've got a big doubling to 12 terabytes. It's one of the largest deeps we've had for some time, actually.
Yeah, I think isn't that something to do with the head quality or the use of the different type of heads on the drives that's allowed them to do that?
I think so. I think that's what's happening.
So I graphed this up, and what's nice about it when you look at it is it's a pretty much, if you do it on a logarithmic scale, it's a straight line increase. And it's incredible to think that for 17 years, they've managed to produce consistent capacity increases year on year on year. Now, throughput hasn't been as good. There have been some drops in throughput from generation to generation. It's not quite as successful. But when you look at the actual capacities, it's amazing.
Yeah, the throughput's probably still the weak point in LTO-8. We're looking for the next big increase in LTO-9, as far as I can see. But yeah, the actual capacity increases, this is raw capacity as well, not just compressed capacity. Yeah, it's very impressive.
So I was looking at the time to write the tape, which is a fantastic little measure. And an original LTO-1 at the throughput it was capable of would take you about an hour and 25 to write an entire tape. LTO-8, we're now up to 8 hours and 45 minutes to write an entire tape.
Yeah, so that does have some interesting impacts, which we might talk about as we go on, about certainly when you get to moving between generations. But yeah, that really is an interesting, it really just shows that the amount of capacity we now have on a single tape.
Yeah, so you're a big user of tape, I guess, and I've been a user of tape in the past, and I remember the old days of 3480, 3490, I think I did a little bit with Magstar, some of the Oracle Storage Tech T10000 series. They all seem to be about the sort of similar capacities and capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, so at the moment, if we look at the latest generation of the IBM 3592s, which were, I think it was this year, I mean, they're 15 terabytes, so LTO and the enterprise tape drives are very, very similar at the moment. So it gives Oracle and IBM some problems, I think, when they're trying to position their enterprise tapes. I mean, sometimes I do know that IBM particularly like to position the duty cycle on their enterprise tape drives, the TS-1155. They talk about 24/7 duty cycle. Sometimes they try and position LTO as a slightly lower duty cycle. My experience is it's much of a muchness. I think they just like to talk things up a bit.
Just for anybody who's not really sure what we mean by that, so when you say duty cycle, you're basically talking about the ability to run it continuously, or at least for the period that you call the duty cycle.
So 24 by 7 as opposed to a 9 to 5, which I think sometimes the LTO gets positioned at.
And I remember looking back and thinking about the mainframe days when we had 3480, 3490, and we were going towards mag style 3592 or whatever it was, its terminology was. I know that when we looked at LTO, one of the things that we were very concerned about was the fact that the enterprise drive on the mainframe, you could rewind, restart, rewind, restart, and you could read anywhere on it, and LTO wasn't necessarily as good at that. But I guess you're saying that's not necessarily as much of a big deal anymore.
I suspect it probably is, but I think this where drives us onto some of the conversations about how we're using tapes differently.
Yeah, okay, so let's move on to that. So let's just put that first section to bed and say LTO, very successful, some very, very large scale capacities coming up in the future. So just for projection purposes, if it still carries on to go past the generation 10, which I think is where they promised they'd get to, we'll potentially, and I've done a little projection here using the cadence of the releases, which are usually 2 to 3 years, then we would see LTO 12 in 2027 as being 192 terabytes raw, 480 terabytes compressed, so nearly half a petabyte on a cartridge.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the roadmap's now there to 12. I know at one point there was a feeling that it might, or there wasn't necessarily agreement between the members of the consortium, but now I think it's fairly solid.
Which is amazing, absolutely incredible, which I think if the consortium is there and saying that they really want to push on to 12, it must be for a good reason. So let's move on and have a conversation about the changing role of tape, because historically, tape was definitely 100% seen as a backup tool, 100% used for backup and restore. If you didn't have your own data center, you'd be shipping tapes off-site. You'd be using those to recover if you had a disaster. It seems to me that for a lot of companies now, tape's moving very much away from that.
A lot of companies are also talking about recovery and backup. So your first thought is how do you recover a system? Recovering from a system from tape is not fast, certainly if you have lots of little files. So if we spin that round and start looking at recovery, and then we start looking at the price of spinning rust disk, we do tend to move away from tape as a backup recovery medium.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because if you look at the capacities, and I think this is probably more coincidental than just anything to do with anything the vendors have done, there's almost a very similar step in the raw capacity of disk drives compared to the raw capacity of a tape. With LTO 8 now in place at 12 terabytes, and you think drives are 12 to 14 terabytes, the sort of the archive style drives. They're in a similar level, so capacities of drives are high enough easily to cover the needs for backup and restore, I think, at a reasonable cost.
All the backup technologies which have come around now, things like dedupe and compression, well, obviously you have compression on tape. Dedupe on disk means that for a backup medium or a recovery medium, it's probably much more appropriate technology for most people.
So do you use tape for backup and restore still?
We still do have tape for backup and restore. We have quite a lot of discussion about whether we should and what we actually should back up. Maybe that's a conversation for another day, but there's a lot of discussion about very rarely will you restore a machine. So you would go and you would reprovision a machine, then use your configuration database or your automation tool, be it Puppet, Ansible, to just recreate it.
Yeah.
If in a disaster or if you've got snaps, you just retrieve the snap.
You're talking about physical or virtual or both?
Both.
Right. So recovering from tape almost becomes a more painful exercise if you're able to do things like snapshot recovery anyway. So why bother using a tape to recover in that scenario? You might as well just have extra stuff on disk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, bare metal recovery, I think, is not something you'd really want to do from tape these days. And if you look at a virtual environment, if something horribly's gone horribly wrong in your virtual environment, you probably don't want to be recovering thousands of machines from your tape library. It's not probably very good at it to start with.
Yeah, I think the other thing we touched on earlier and we were going to go back to is the fact that from a performance perspective, getting data on and off a tape is significantly more difficult, not more difficult, but it's certainly more lengthy in time than it used to be. Now, as somebody who uses tapes all the time, Martin, if I'm trying to read to a particular point on that tape, and I think looking at the media, I didn't actually pull any figures out on physical length of the tape, but I think the tapes have got thinner and therefore longer in order to fit in the same cartridge. There's clearly got to be a very different access profile in terms of access time to get to first byte when you want to retrieve something off an LTO tape.
Yeah, so your seek times are measured in seconds now. if you're on tape.
Yeah.
Obviously, and if you've got a robot, it's not just a case of finding that space. You have to find that tape, move it into a slot, and then serially go through it until you find where you want to be. And then you can start reading.
So do you think LTFS has actually improved that at all, or has that been a red herring? Because that was sold as being potentially a way to convert tapes to being much more usable in a more random fashion.
Okay, so I've not seen a huge amount of LTFS at an enterprise level. I do see it as a format for interchange. Certainly if you're working in anywhere which is going to move tapes around between companies, a self-describing tape format is very, very useful, and that's what LTFS is. So I know some of the big media houses do use it to move content around, put it on the back of a bike. Ship these days would be 12 terabytes. Yeah. That's a decent sized piece of media. Get it to somebody and they can deal with it. They don't need to be using the same archive or backup tool as you. It's all self-described. They can pull it in, they can mount it and treat it like a drive on their desktop or however they wish to do so.
Yeah, I guess after you've spent that, well, depending on whether you're talking LTO 7 or 8, that 5 hours 50 minutes or 9 hours 45 minutes it takes to write to the tape in the first place, and then it takes you a short amount of time to ship it to somebody.
I was going to say, I think the important thing to talk about LTFS is it's not just LTO, but both the big enterprise manufacturers also do support have LTFS on their drives as well.
Yeah, true. I think that's a fair point. It's not a LTO proprietary format, is it? It's a generic format that anybody could use.
It's a pretty open standard. I think the implementations are open source or very close to being open source, I think.
So one slight sideways from that conversation is, and that's if you look at how people are writing to tape, in general, you could look at Spectralogic's Black Pearl appliance as a gateway to getting data onto tape rather than having to use, say, LTFS or any other type of process to write that data.
Yeah, Black Pearl's interesting because it obviously, I'm not sure if anybody or everybody listening is aware, but it puts an object, basically an S3 extension, in front of your tape library. So you can treat it very much like an object store, which probably has some, or quite a lot of value for some people.
As a technology, it's a great idea that you're standardizing an interface that is written in the same way that you would write S3 without having to think about how you're retrieving that data. But I know that in the first instance, perhaps we should have a word with Brian and Matt and Co and get them to come and talk about it. But I know in the first instance, they had to write a few extensions to the S3 API simply because when you're writing large files or you're retrieving files, if you were assuming that everything was entirely random, you could actually defeat the platform simply because it wouldn't be able to go and read the tapes quick enough to make it look like it responded to you quick enough. So although it had a cache at the front of it, if you were reading files that were at other ends of the tape back and forth, A, you could be ruining your tapes, but B, the response time would be hideous. So, you know, there were some, I think, some extensions in to make it work more efficiently. And I think, as far as I'm aware, that there's been a lot of additional work into the Black Pearl platform to improve it. So it must be going in the right direction.
Yeah, we must get the guys on to talk about it and how we found it and what the acceptance is within the industry. It'd be an interesting conversation.
Definitely. So let's talk about archive, long-term archive and compliance. Does this seem to be the place where tape is headed and what the future of tape will be?
Yeah, I think so. Even if you have a large active archive, certainly if you have an off-site or a very cold archive, a tape makes perfect sense. Obviously, you can take a tape out of a library and you could send it to somebody like Iron Mountain to look after for you. For compliance, it's got a very long life. So if you're anything which is your heavily regulated and you want to keep it for a very long time, you're probably going to put it on tape. You may have some discussion about how long and how often you're going to have to migrate that. Tapes do have quite a long lifespan, and the actual drive technologies themselves can, LTO itself can read and write the previous format and then read the one before that.
Yeah.
So that's useful. So if you think between LTO 6 and LTO 8, you've probably got at least 5 years and probably longer than that, to be honest. When you with throw it in, it's probably heading to 7.5, eight years worth of life just on that. And there will always be LTO drives around. There's a lot of them in which you could actually reuse if you needed to.
Yeah, so that's an interesting scenario. So first of all, the fact that you have got the ability to go backwards generationally, you know, N-1, as you said, read write, N-2, read only. So you have got the ability to refresh and to replace. But I know on the latest LTO 8 release, there was an interesting feature that if you bought or you got out and bought a load of LTO7 cartridges because you're already using LTO7 drives, you can format an LTO7 cartridge in an LTO8 drive as an LTO8M cartridge, which effectively gives you 50% increase in capacity for an LTO7 cartridge in an LTO8 drive, which is free money.
Yeah, it's free money. Interesting, that's been a feature of the 3592, the IBM Enterprise drives for some time. You've been able to go back three generations, I seem to remember, for those, but you can reformat the tapes and get extra capacity on them.
I don't think with this you can actually reformat them. I did have a chat with Brian Granger from Spectralogic, and the feedback from him was that it's a one-time thing. So when you first use that cartridge, it gets tagged as what it's going to be for its life. So you can't necessarily go and change it. But, you know, even so, if you've got cartridges lying around and you want to take that LTO tape upgrade to LTO8 and you don't want to throw away those old cartridges, or you want to use them in the new drives, at least it's something. At least it's a 50% increase over what you would be doing.
I wonder if you can actually get up the chip and reprogram it. I can imagine there's probably not a huge market for it, but the way people have done with printers and things like that, where you're trying to spoof the
cartridge hacking
DRM on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It must be in there somewhere, mustn't it? That must be the way that they're doing it. So yeah. I guess there is an opportunity to do it if you really want to spend the time. But I don't know how much an LTO cartridge costs now. So how much would you lose if you get it wrong?
Well, LTO cartridges probably between £15 and £20 a cartridge, I seem to remember, depending on how many you're buying. In my day job, we buy an awful lot, so we don't pay a lot for our cartridges. But yeah, but as a medium goes, it's pretty cheap.
It is really. Yeah, if you look at the per megabyte or the per gigabyte or however you want to measure it, the cost, it is definitely a cost effective medium. And obviously if you're not in a situation where you have to care about access to every single tape all the time, then you know your drive to tape ratio can be as high or low as you like, can't it, in terms of how many drives you set aside in order to read and write the content you have.
And as I said, and you can offsite them. I haven't really seen anybody been able to offsite hard drives, unless we start writing to the cloud, which brings its own issues, which we can talk about at some point.
Not unless you're using those. There were some drives. What were the drives? Was it Jazz drives?
Oh, Jazz and Zip drives.
Jazz and Zip.
Yeah.
Was Jazz a bigger version of a Zip drive? I'm trying to think. I'm sure I remember there being like a real chunky version of like a Zip drive.
There was. Yeah. But then there's the classic click of death, which was with a Zip drive, and you knew a Zip drive was dying because it would start to click, and then it was gone.
I think I've actually thrown out all of that old technology. I tell you what the other one was. Was it iOmega? Was that a Zip drive? Was it?
iOmega made a Zip and the
They made them both. But I remember that it wasn't that long ago that I threw them out. But they were, I guess they were great for their time, but I don't think they were anywhere near reliable enough. And you're right, removable hard drives is a risky business.
I'll tell you what, we could go right back into strange tape formats, and we could go Sinclair Microdrive.
Yeah, no. So I did. I had the expansion pack on my Spectrum. I had the microdrive, and I actually tried to work out how the microdrive worked. It wasn't easy. The Spectrum had a. For anybody who's not as old as we are, Martin, the ZX Spectrum 1982, I think it came out, had a plug-in adapter board that gave you extensions to the actual original machine. And one of those things was a thing called a microdrive, which was basically a drive about the size of I don't smoke, but I would say maybe slightly taller than a pack of cigarettes type size. And it would allow you to put in a little cartridge, which was actually pretty small. And I have no idea what the capacity of it was, but it basically was a continuous loop of tape going around the cartridge. And you could read and write your programs and your software to and from it. But it was hideously unreliable.
It was. You wouldn't say it was a good advert for tape, really.
No, it's probably the worst advert for tape. I don't think I ever got it to work properly. But what I tried to work out how to program it, because I thought if I can read and write from the thing directly, maybe I could actually write something that would allow me to recover if I lost the contents. And I think the way that they'd done it was they built a shadow ROM in the plug-in cartridge that plugged into the back, so there was a second ROM that overrode the main ROM in the machine when it worked. And I had the shadow ROM disassembly, and I went through the entire disassembly to try and work out what instructions were being used to write to the cartridge, and I never managed to work it out.
So I've just checked. It was a 5 meter endless loop of magnetic tape.
5 meter. Wow.
5 meter, and it was 85K on the spectrum. If you had a Sinclair QL, it was at least 100K.
That's not bad, because, you know, if you think the original models were 16, then you had 48. That was, yeah, okay. You know, that's not as bad as I thought it was.
A data retrieval rate was 15 kilobytes per second.
Yeah. We should laugh at that, really, because you look at what we've just talked about number-wise, and that's just like, it's not even worth bothering about, is it?
No.
It's incredible.
No, we have faster broadband, let's put it like that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? You just look at it and you can see the difference. So so let's go back to the idea of archive and compliance then. Obviously, that seems to be where we're seeing tape really, I guess, gain its niche. And I wonder when, as we move forward with things like GDPR and we've moved on with the need to be a bit more aware of our data and our content and compliance, though clearly things like encryption and worm capabilities came in with LTO for a while back. But I wonder whether we need to be looking at how we actually read and write to cartridges in order to make it work more effectively. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we probably do. Obviously, the encryption and, as you said, yeah, compression, it has been there for a long time, and we have worm capability. The tape has some really interesting problems in data protection. The ability to lose a tape is, if it's not encrypted, is quite nasty, because obviously as these tapes get bigger, your potential for data loss for a single, even with a single tape, I mean, you look at the capacity of it. If you're backing up a database, or you're putting a database on it for compliance reasons, that's an awful lot of records to lose in one go.
It's your business. It could be your entire business in one cartridge. So yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a real risk and a real exposure. But at the end of the day, it seems to be to me that it's one of those things that you should just say, there's no reason not to encrypt. There's no reason you should not be encrypting your data from day one all the time. It should just be a standard anyway. So that problem should never come up, but obviously it does.
Yeah, I haven't actually heard of it. Well, actually, these days people seem to manage their websites so insecurely. That seems to web data leaks. But in the past, it wasn't uncommon to read an article on the register saying so-and-so had lost the tapes, or read that and secure and not secured them.
Yeah, it does come around quite a lot, doesn't it, every so often. It's clear that people aren't as careful as they should be, shall we say.
And the best thing about, as these formats get ever bigger, the capacities get ever bigger, we certainly don't offsite any of our tapes, because our archive is actually, but the archive I run is fully active and it's online. So we're just in a constant state of migration, and if we need to, we'll go and buy some more slots, we'll go and buy another rack.
Right, so I was just going to ask you about that, because I think that's probably a good question to sort of finish up on. And that's that whole idea of the fact that we did start with LTO1 with very small drives, and over time you have got a need to refresh and to move that content forward. I know that when I was involved in using tape a lot, we would, especially with more backup, I guess, than archive, we would refresh tapes and we'd recycle them, and we'd spend an awful long time doing that. I guess that's still the case, and it's probably even more relevant when you're looking at archive.
It is. I would say it's time-consuming, but not necessarily administration time-consuming. As long as you've got a decent archive system, for instance, my professional experience is mostly around TSM. Right. And TSM will do all that migration for you. You just basically add the tapes in and tell it to move from one pool to another, and off it goes. And you just move, or just migrate tapes, and just say, just migrate that tape range and knock those out. So yeah, it takes a long time. And once you start, if you're any decent size, you're probably never going to stop, but it's not the most difficult thing in the world. It's not the most onerous task in the world. But the duty cycle, yeah, then does come into the whole thing. And once you're in tape migration, you do worry about your duty cycle, because you're going to be stressing the drives, because you're going to be reading and writing flat out most of the time.
Yeah, I guess that's part of the design, though. When you're building an archive like that, you set aside X number of tapes, X amount of drive capacity for that sort of thing, and you look at how much you're going to be doing that sort of replacement process.
And I think there's obviously number of businesses which are going to get into this. I mean, obviously, there's traditional big players like the banks, media, pharmaceuticals, who have to keep, certainly the pharmaceuticals, and actually some of the banks are having to keep their regulatory compliance backups for 10s, 50s, or in pharmaceuticals cases, it's 100 years.
I guess some medical records, it's lifetime of the patient plus, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're storing, you are storing stuff for an awful long time. So you do need a really good process to make sure that media both is readable physically and secondly readable logically.
and banks, it's mortgage, length of a mortgage plus, I can't remember how many years after the mortgage it has to be kept. And it phrases in GDPR will frame another interesting thing, which is not just how secure everything is actually, are you deleting the data in the right time? And that may be a bit more challenging in a tape environment.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting to see whether we can get away with logically deleting stuff and tagging stuff, and if there's a way that we can manage to do that without having to physically copy data off and exclude the stuff that we want to delete, because otherwise it's just going to create, I can't see how it cannot create a complete mayhem. But then we haven't seen that being tested yet, so I don't know whether under current data protection laws that is seen as an issue. I don't think it is. So under the new laws, maybe we'll have to see a few test cases and a few scenarios where that gets worked through.
Yet again, another subject for another podcast, GDPR.
Oh, yeah. And there seems to be a lot of stuff talked about it as if it's some sort of incredibly different and really complicated process. But I don't think it is. I think it's a lot of it is common sense. But at the same time, there are new rules and coming into it. So one final thing just to touch on before we go, and that's, do you think the cloud providers are really using tape heavily? I know they might be in their, say, support of some of the SaaS platforms, but do you think they're using tape heavily in some of their cloud storage platforms? And how's that going to affect them with GDPR if they're classed as being the sort of the manager of that data?
We know they are, because we know Google in the past have had to go back to tape. When they had, I believe it was a Gmail problem where they went back to tape for backing up their email systems. I presume Microsoft do. And obviously provide a tape-like service, and everybody suspects it is tape at the back end, although I don't believe they've ever confirmed. But there has been pictures inside of Amazon's data centers of big tape libraries. So one would assume for Glacier that it is going on to tape. Oracle also have a similar cloud storage, but is a tape-like offering. So everybody has a tape-like offering in their own right. And obviously, and some of them will be offering services which they're archiving and backing up themselves. So, yeah, I think they could be GDPR, and remember the whole thing with GDPR, the service provider themselves can find themselves on the hook, not just the client as well. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting times.
We'll save that one for another discussion.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Martin. I guess the long-term future of tape we're saying is really that archive and compliance area.
Yeah, just remember archive and not backup, and you'll be good with your tape.
Thanks for that, Martin, and thanks for everybody for listening. I'm just going to remind everybody that you can find us at storageunpacked.com online. And I did do a little bit of checking. We don't actually get a name for the LinkedIn group. It actually is just everybody's group name in LinkedIn is just a number. So go and search us on LinkedIn and see if you can find us there, and you'll find some more content and discussion from us online. Thanks for listening.